Chapter 12. Sitting on a shallow chair in his rooms, Bran stared at the data tablet laid on the table in front of him. A perfunctory knock on the metal bulkhead preceded Agapito's entry. Bran glanced up at his brother and waved him to the couch opposite.
"What is it, brother?" asked Agapito, choosing to stand. "Lord Korax tells me there's been a significant development in the gene project. We are to accompany him to Ravendelve."
"Yes, I heard," said Bran.
He glanced at the digital chronometer on the table next to the data slate.
"We have a little time."
"You seem preoccupied," said Agapito.
He lightened the comment with a smile.
"Is Commander of Recruits proving more of a challenge than you thought?"
"I keep having to put myself between Six and that Magos, with a Primarch constantly demanding updates. But that's not what I want to talk about."
Bran handed the slate to his brother, the transmission data highlighted.
"Can you explain that?"
Agapito looked at the tablet and frowned. He glanced at Bran and then looked back at the data slate.
"That is my command channel," said Agapito.
"I know," replied Bran. "I don't recognize the transmission code, though. Some kind of glitch in the system?"
"You tell me, brother."
Looking sharply at Bran, Agapito dropped the tablet back on the metal table with a clang.
"Those are ominous words, Bran," said the commander. "I detect accusation behind them." "Just interest," replied Bran. "Call it my curiosity. Tell me, why is there an irregular transmission from your channel broadcast on a non-Legion frequency?"
"I do not know, brother," said Agapito. "If you have some charge to make, then speak it plainly. Your crude hinting is testing my patience."
Bran stood up and met his brother's gaze directly. He folded his arms across his chest and regarded Agapito for a few seconds, gauging his expression. The commander of the Talons looked genuinely confused and upset.
"You offer no explanation for this," said Bran.
"None," replied Agapito, his tone belligerent. "Do you offer any explanation for your suspicion?"
Breathing in deeply, Bran considered his next move. It was likely that Agapito was genuinely ignorant of the transmission, which gave him a bigger problem. Someone had accessed the command communications without authorization. Bran was not sure which was the worst scenario.
"All right," he said. "I will have Ifrania look into it more closely. Maybe it is a glitch."
"Are you sure?" said Agapito. "Don't you want to take me down to the red level and subject me to a more rigorous interrogation?"
Bran snarled, offended by the implication.
The red level was where the punishment cells had been located during the years of Kievaran suppression. They had had a bloody reputation back then, and the thought of the tortures that prisoners had undergone in that dark place set Bran's teeth on edge even now.
"Sorry, brother, that was uncalled for," said Agapito, offering out his hand in apology.
Bran took it, after a moment's hesitation.
"I don't understand you, brother. Not since Istvan," Bran confessed. "It worries me."
"No need for it," said Agapito, with a grin that Bran could clearly see was forced. "You have plenty of concerns already without adding me to the list."
"Yes, I do," said Bran, with another glance at the chronometer. "We had best get armoured. The Primarch will expect us at the dock soon."
"You can talk to me, brother," said Agapito, "about the recruitment project if you need to. I have not been able to pay half as much attention to it as I would like, not with all of my time taken up with the Legion reorganization."
"How are the Talons shaping up?"
"Good. Better than expected, given the circumstances. A few discipline problems now and then, but nothing I can't straighten out. They've had a hard time of late."
"Don't go easy on them, brother," said Bran, indicating for Agapito to head for the door. "It's going to get a lot harder."
As he watched Agapito leave, Bran could not shake off a question that he wanted to ask, but could not bring himself to voice. "Why are you lying to me, brother?" In an antechamber of the infirmary in Ravendelve, Korax waited with a mixture of anticipation and foreboding. Cabinets lined one wall, shelves laden with a mass of medical devices on the opposite side. Metal benches had been cleared of other equipment to serve as seats. It had been 4 days since he had authorized the first implantation sequence. Vincente Six had been cautious in his advice, but Orlandriaz had been adamant. They were ready to proceed to the next logical stage. Agapito and Bran waited with their Primarch. Sensing his mood, they had said little, but Korax detected an undercurrent of tension between the two commanders. Korax was sure it was due to disagreements about the Gene Project. A scrape at the door caught the attention of all in the room. Korax took a sharp breath, but let it out when he saw that it was Solaro and Aloni. They offered terse greetings and sat themselves next to their fellow commanders.
"Let's hope this has worked, eh?" said Aloni.
"Nothing to lose," said Solaro. "If it does not work, we are where we started out."
"It will work," said Korax.
He had spent every moment he had to spare on the gene seed manipulation, combining his own knowledge and fragments of the Emperor's memories with a research of Six and Orlandria's. The Primarch had scrutinized every gene sequence and permutation and was convinced the Chief Apothecary and Tech Priest had found the solution. With that assurance, the commanders waited in silence. Agapito fidgeted, tapping his fingers on his knee pads, stopping when he earned himself a scowl from Bran. Korax wished he could have overseen the final implantation himself, as the Emperor had personally attended to the Primarch's creation, but his sheer size had made it impractical for him to stay in the sterile chamber where the process was taking place. The door opened again, revealing Vincente Six. The apothecary was dressed in surgical robes, a smear of blood across the front. He peeled off a pair of thin gloves and stuffed them into a pocket across his stomach.
"How are they?" asked Korax, standing up.
"Come and see for yourself," said Six.
Korax followed the apothecary out of the door, the commanders behind him. Stepping into the main infirmary, the Primarch was struck by how cold it was. He remembered that the recruits had been placed in a brief cryobiotic state as a precaution against rampant cell reproduction, a stage in the process Korax hoped to eliminate with the next group of recruits if this proved successful. The chill was emanating from the nine men standing bare-chested close to their beds alongside one wall. They wore loose trousers and soft boots, the air around them filled with faint vapour from their warming bodies. All nine were the same physically, as tall and broad as a legionary. Some of their facial structure remained distinct, allowing the Primarch to identify each with the recruits he had wished well before their transformation. Their bodies were free of hair still, and their skin was pale, almost albino, like their Primarch. He also noticed that every subject had dark eyes, not quite the black orbs he possessed, but certainly far greyer than even those of previous Raven Guard. There were identical surgical marks on the bodies of all nine, though the scars were already becoming indistinct. The pattern was instantly recognizable to any member of the Legiones Astartes, as was the discoloration beneath the skin of their torso and shoulders.
"They have their black carapaces already," said Solaro.
"They have every enhanced organ you possess, Commander," said Orlandrius, emerging from behind the group of giant post-humans. "The black carapace must still be implanted as before, it being a mostly artificial construct."
"And the rest are grown naturally?" said Bran.
He took a step closer to the new legionaries, examining them carefully. The recruits stood to attention with eyes firmly fixed ahead, not reacting to the scrutiny of their superiors.
"Yes," said Six, gesturing for one of the men, Korax remembered his name as Hal Vadiaro, to step forwards. "Several of the gene seed implantations will not be necessary when the process is perfected. They serve only to prepare the body for later implants and have no direct effect after maturation."
"What about the progenoids?" asked Solaro. "Do they mature quickly?"
"They do," said Orlandrias with something of a smirk. "However, they will also become unnecessary once we have completed our work. Once the modified gene seed is finished, we will be able to reproduce from source. There will be no need of the antiquated in-host maturation you currently rely upon."
"We can make as many gene seed sets as we like," explained Six. "Numbers will only be limited by the availability of recruits."
Korax only half heard the exchange as the commanders continued to ask questions about the recruits' capabilities and physical enhancements. He was captivated by the nine men, marveling in their existence. He knew every cell in their bodies better than he knew the Ravenspire, yet to see them in the flesh was breathtaking. They were perfect examples of the Legiones Astartes.
"Where is the tenth man?"
asked Agapito, breaking through Korax's admiration. The Primarch turned a raised brow to the two men who were architects of the project. Six and Orlandrias shared a look. The Chief Apothecary sighed.
a minute defect in the heart. Microscopic. Was ruptured by the accelerated cell generation, said Six. It would have happened even with regular gene seed.
Avoidable, added the tech priest. More thorough screening will eliminate the problem.
I thought the plan was that we would be able to relax the recruitment criteria, said Agapito.
In time we will, said Korax.
He walked up to the man who had stepped forwards and laid a hand on his shoulder. He glanced back at the commanders.
The next stage of development will be to introduce sequences in the gene seed that will be retroactive. Genetic weaknesses and minor physical discrepancies will be eliminated by the introduction of the superior gene seed.
There were looks exchanged between the others in the room as they absorbed the full portent of Korax's words, an almost limitless supply of legionaries.
If that can be achieved, if the gene tech can be passed on to the other loyal legions, those loyal to the Emperor would outnumber the traitors within months, the Primarch continued, meeting the gaze of Diaro. These nine are the first of thousands, tens of thousands when we have finished. It is for that reason we must do everything we can to force Horus to hold back his attack on Terra. Not only will we gain time for Dawn to build ever greater defenses, we buy ourselves the space to rebuild after the losses of Istvan.
The group of commanders circled around the recruits, examining them from every angle. Korax felt a moment of concern, realizing the attitude he had towards these newest Raven Guard. They were not just experimental subjects, not just benchmarks on a path to recovery. They were warriors of the Legiones Astartes.
"I have an important question to ask you," he said to Diaro, crouching so that he was level with the man's eyes. "Answer it truthfully."
"Yes, Lord Korax,"
the recruit replied, his voice now deep, edged with a husky timbre.
"How do you feel?"
Diaro looked at the other newly created legionaries, and they all broke into smiles. Another of them answered the question first.
"I feel good, Lord Korax. Strong. Healthy."
"Ready to fight?"
asked Bran.
"Yes, Commander," said Diaro.
He banged a fist against his heavily muscled chest.
Ready to kill traitors.
The internal communications chime disturbed Korax's study of the latest test reports on the new legionaries. He paused the flow of information across the three screens in front of him and activated the receiver.
Lord Korax, your presence at the command chamber is required, said Ifrania.
The Primarch thought he could detect barely suppressed laughter in her voice.
We have a situation that may need your intervention.
Please be more specific, said Korax,
reaching out to a mug of water balanced on the edge of his metal desk. He realized he had been cloistered in the study room for more than 12 hours.
We have detected two Imperial fist vessels approaching deliverance, Lord,
Ifrania explained.
Report to me when you find out what they want, said the Primarch.
He took a gulp of water, savoring it as if it were fine wine.
The Watch Commander can surely handle this.
Bran is on Watch Command, Lord, said Ifrania.
Her smirk was almost audible.
The Imperial Fists vessels are under the command of Captain Norris. The exchange is getting quite heated.
Korax sighed, switched off the data screens and stood up. Very well, I'll be there soon, he said. Make sure Bran doesn't do something hot-headed, like opening fire.
Yes, Lord. I'll do my best, said Ifrania,
trying not to laugh. Running fingers through his thick hair, Korax stretched his shoulders and cracked his knuckles. It had been 6 days since gene seed implantation had been completed on the first recruits, and there was a stream of genetic data and physiological examination reports for him to digest if he wanted to take the project to its next stage. Whatever the reason for Norris's arrival, it was inopportune at best, and suspicious at worst. Was Dawn sending his man to keep an eye on the Raven Guard? The Primarch made his way to the conveyor and rose up through Ravenspire to the command chamber close to the pinnacle. As he entered, he could hear Captain Norris's voice over the vox. Bran was hunched over the communications console, a vox link clasped in his gauntleted fist.
"Your security protocol makes no sense, Commander," Norris was protesting. "I can see no benefit to such a delay."
On the other side of the chamber, standing pointedly in front of the weapons armament panel, Ifrania caught Korax's eye. He walked over to her as Bran stabbed a finger into the reply switch.
"You cannot enter Deliverance orbital space without prior authorization, Captain,"
said the commander. Observe proper protocol, and we will proceed.
Commander Bran is demanding that the Imperial Fists leave orbit and request permission to approach, said the controller.
I have already explained the reason for not doing so, said Norris. You are compromising our mission here.
Bran,
snapped Korax. The commander spun around, obviously having not noticed the Primarch's arrival.
Explain. The Imperial Fist sent no hail after entering the system, Lord, said Bran. Our protocols dictate that they stand out from the vicinity of Kievar and request permission to approach. At the moment, Ravenspire is within range of their weapons.
Korax crossed the room, forcing Bran to stand aside at the console. The Primarch took up the transmitter.
Captain Norris, this is Lord Korax, he said. Why did you not declare your approach to deliverance?
As I told Commander Bran, Lord Korax, I wish knowledge of our presence here to be minimized, said Norris after a slight delay. A long-range hail would have announced our presence as surely as a chorus of blaring trumpets. It is imperative that I speak with you. I have messages from Lord Dorne and the Sigilite.
Commander Bran is correct, said Korax. Please withdraw by 100,000 kilometers and prepare your ships to receive boarding parties. Commander Bran will meet you in person aboard your vessel to hear what you have to say. If he deems it necessary, he will then grant you authority to approach Deliverance and send a delegation to Ravenspire.
There was a longer pause before Norris replied.
As you wish, Lord Korax, said the Imperial Fists captain. I take it that I should treat Commander Bran as your absolute authority?
For certain, said Korax. If you wish to keep a low profile, I suggest you retire out orbit to place Deliverance between your ships and Kievar. There will be no further long-range communication until Commander Bran has assessed the situation.
Understood, Lord Korax.
Korax turned to Bran and saw an expression of self-satisfaction, an expression that changed to one of contrition when the commander saw the anger in Korax's eyes.
I might expect such behavior from a lower officer, but you are a commander and you must set an example.
Korax rasped. You will be cordial and cooperative with Captain Norris and extend him every assistance he requires.
Aye, Lord,
said Bran, looking down at the decking. He raised his eyes for a brief moment before turning his gaze away again.
I admit that perhaps I was overzealous in my application of procedure. In my defense, the Imperial Fists did breach our security, and I was only telling them to do the same as you did.
You forced me to support your stance, Bran, said Korax, voice edged with irritation.
I am not about to countermand the orders of one of my commanders in front of another legion, but I do not agree with your response. Do not allow personal feelings to impede your duty again.
I am returning to my chambers to continue my work. The next interruption I expect will be your full report on why the Imperial Fists have come here.
Understood, Lord, said Bran.
He turned away and called to Control Aphrania.
Signal Alpha Doc to ready me a Thunderhawk.
Korax watched the commander stride from the control room and felt a moment of worry. Something was eating at Bran, something between him and Agapito. The two of them had shown moments of ill-discipline since the return from Istvan, and their behavior at Ravendelve had bordered on antipathy towards each other. Korax was determined to root out the cause, and if necessary, he would find new commanders. Despite his concern, Korax decided that, for the moment, it would wait. The Gene Project was more pressing. When the next generation of Raven Guard was secure, the Primarch would turn his full attention to the existing one. He was eager to move on to wider implantation and chafed at the thought of waiting for the results of more tests. Within moments, his mind was full of thoughts on how to refine the new gene tech, the problems with his commanders forgotten. As the Primarch made his way back to his chambers, he told himself to have patience. A moment of rashness now might ruin all of the hard work and achievements that had come before. Feeling calmer, he sat down at his desk and started the data flow again. The interior of the Wrathful Vanguard was very different to the inside of a Raven Guard vessel. It resembled more closely a fortress than a starship, the walls layered with plates of bare metal, etched with legion mottos and ferrocrete slabs carved with the sigils and devices of the Imperial Fists. Buttresses reinforced every corridor. Doors were arch-shaped and made of heavily bolted wood, and bulkheads were cross-barred with gilded girders. Bran did not think it ostentatious,
not like some of the vessels of the Emperor's children he had travelled on, but there was an aesthetic that he found artificial and pompous. Raised in whitewashed cell blocks, the Raven Guard preferred the functional over the ornamental, and even since liberation, Deliverance was only sparsely furnished and decorated. The commander followed Norris along a central passageway to a heavy elevator. A squad of Raven Guard followed a little way behind, and they in turn were tailed by 10 warriors of the Imperial Fists. Bran had not remarked on this welcome, still smarting from Korax's admonishment, and had allowed Norris his prideful show of authority. The conveyor descended with only a whine of electric motors, unlike the clanking, rattling elevators of Ravenspire. There was room enough for all of the legionaries, allowing the Raven Guard and Imperial Fists to stand a few metres separated from each other. They could not have been more dissimilar, the sons of Korax in their black, patched-up armour, and the Warriors of Dawn, resplendent in yellow and gleaming gold. The Imperial Fists stood to attention in a uniform line, bolters held at their waists. The Raven Guard had gathered in a clump, bolters slung on their belts, arms crossed, or hands on hips.
"How are things on Terra?" Bran asked, feeling that he should break the stony silence.
"The fortification continues," replied Norris.
Bran waited, but there was no further comment forthcoming. He looked at the Imperial Fists.
"Your legionaries have turned out well,"
he said, thinking of something complimentary to say.
"They're a credit to the Legion."
"We were fortunate not to be involved in the debacle at Istvan," said Norris.
He glanced at the Raven Guard.
"It is understandable that after such a disaster, certain standards must be compromised."
Taking in a deep breath, Bran resisted the bait.
"We're ready to fight, despite our appearance," he said.
"I know you are, Commander," said Norris. "It was not a condemnation of your preparedness or your ability. Your armorium has shown remarkable ingenuity in effecting such modifications."
"We adapt, as ever. Hide some salt for the gruel, as we say."
"An interesting motto," said Norris.
It was hard to tell his mood from the modulation of his armour's external emitters, but Bran detected amusement.
"I am not sure what it means, though."
"You weren't born in a prison, obviously," said Bran.
"No, I was not, Commander."
The conveyor shuddered to a stop, and the door slid open. Bran's armour detected vacuum as air blew out of the elevator in a gust that tousled the lanyards hanging from Norris's shoulder pads.
"I hope you now understand why I insisted on full armour."
They stepped out into darkness, footfall silent in the void, the light from the conveyor casting long shadows over a floor of unpainted metal.
"The vacuum is a precaution only,"
Norris continued as he led the way. Suit lamps automatically sprang into life from the group as they moved further into the chamber. Turning, Bran saw that the walls were some considerable distance away, 30 meters or more.
"We wish the cargo to arrive in pristine condition."
"Cargo?" said Bran.
His question was answered as his suit lamp played over a figure a few meters ahead. He stopped suddenly, taken aback. As the legionaries converged, several rows of armoured suits reflected back their lamps. The metal and ceramite were bare, the suits silver and dull grey. Lifeless masks gazed back at the commander as he turned left and right. There were several dozen sets of armour, each locked in place against a strut welded to the floor.
"Mark VI," said Norris. "The latest design from Mars."
Bran said nothing as he approached the closest rank of empty armour. It looked instantly familiar, at first glance little different from the Mark IV armour he wore. On closer inspection, the Raven Guard commander could see the subtle differences in panel shape and bonding, the thicker material of the flexible joints, the solid greaves covering the knees. Most obvious was the bolt-reinforced left shoulder plate and the helmet design.
"They still require a little further work, I'm afraid," said Norris. "Lord Dawn wished them shipped out to you as soon as we were able. They're artificer made, pre-production. You'll be the first legion in the Imperium to be issued with Mark VI.
"A nice gesture," said Bran.
He ran his hand over the studded shoulder pad.
"We performed combat tests on the prototype for 2 years during the campaign through Scalan Sector. I see they've solved the problem of the abdominal plating we reported."
"Most of the improvements your legion suggested were implemented," said Norris, almost wistfully. "Protection is no better than the Mark IV, but the internal systems are far more efficient.
The external cabling, you see, is supplemented by backups within the armor plate itself, without compromising defense or adding excessive weight. Auto sensors have also been improved. In particular, auditory and olfactory pickups are much more sensitive. You will no doubt be pleased to hear that the stealth capabilities of this suit exceed that of any other variant.
Bran nodded. You called it Mark VI. What happened to Mark V?
Norris pointed at the Raven Guard legionaries.
With full production not yet begun on Mars, these are the only suits available. Our companion transport has another 1,500 of them, on top of the 500 we are carrying. In the absence of reliable Legion supply lines, the Mechanicum have designated all non-standard or stopgap designs as Mark V. Many of the improvisations made by your Amorium after the drop site massacre are being passed on to other Legions in the absence of replacement parts for Mark IV. Your legionaries already have Mark V, Commander.
Why us? Said Bran. I'm thankful for your help, but this is a long way to come to pay us a favor.
In recognition of your part in testing the suits, and because you need them most, you have been honored. The Mark VI is to be known as the Corvus suit.
Bran laughed and jabbed a finger towards the conical faceplate in front of him.
Because we're the Raven Guard and the armor has a beak, he said. Some honor.
It is named after your lord, as thanks for the part you have played and the losses you suffered when testing the prototypes, said Norris, addressing his words to all of the Raven Guard.
Lord Korax is insistent that the Raven Guard will take the fight to Horus's forces. Lord Dorne sends these gifts to your legion as a mark of support and to assist in that endeavor.
You think we don't deserve them? Said Bran, picking up on the captain's tone. They would be better used by the Imperial Fists on Terra.
On the contrary, said Norris. If I were to put desire before duty, I would like just as much as you to strike back at the rebels. As it is, I must deliver this cargo and return to the Legion.
Silence followed the captain's remarks. He gestured for the group to return to the conveyor. Bran considered the Imperial Fist's words, surprised by them. The doors to the elevator shut behind them, and air hissed into the compartment. With a jolt, the conveyor began to ascend.
It must have taken quite a bit of effort to get to Deliverance, said Bran. What with the warp storms and everything else?
Navigation continues to be very difficult, yes, said Norris. In fact, the 7th Legion fleet, which Lord Dorne originally dispatched to...
So, it's going to be a long journey back for you.
It is, Commander. I sense you're trying to imply something, but I do not know what it is.
How many legionaries do you have with you?
Asked Bran, looking at the Imperial Fist squad.
150, said Norris. I do not see how that would be relevant to our journey time.
In your assessment, how many of your legion are defending Terra?
When I left, there were more than 40,000 Imperial Fists stationed at the palace, said Norris.
He grunted.
I think I understand your meaning, Commander. 150 legionaries would be a far more significant addition relatively to your force of a few thousand.
I would have said that we need you more than Lord Dorne at the moment, but it comes to the same place, said Bran. Communication is difficult, though. We haven't had more than a few scraps from Terra since the storm started. The astropaths are trying hard, but they can't break through the disturbance. You won't be able to confirm a change of orders from your Legion command.
I know that you think we Imperial Fists are intractable, Commander, but we do not abhor initiative as you suggest.
Norris extended his hand.
If Lord Korax agrees, I would be honored to suborn my command to the Raven Guard for the moment.
Bran looked down at the proffered hand, and then took it in a firm grip.
Glad you agree, Captain, said Bran. Happily for you, you'll be under the direction of Commander Agapito, not me.
Despite our early issues and personal differences, Commander Bran, I would have no problem serving under you. Against overwhelming opposition, you rescued Lord Korax and the remains of your legion from Istvan. That is a feat worthy of respect and praise. You are a hero of the Imperium, Commander.
I am,
laughed Bran. There were chuckles from the other legionaries, both Raven Guard and Imperial Fists. Since Istvan, the Commander had felt as if he had failed. The most important battle in the Legion's history, and he missed it. He and his warriors had been apart from the others, isolated from the bond that had brought the rest of the Legion together, Terrans and those of Deliverance. To hear Norris speak of his actions in such terms allowed him for the first time to think differently about the matter.
If that makes me a hero of the Imperium, we'll have to come up with a new title for whoever kills Horus.
It'll be Russ, said one of Bran's honor guard. Just you wait. Once the Space Wolves get involved, this'll be over quick.
Maybe we'll get to him first, said another.
Sanguinius, said Norris, silencing the debate. The sons of Fenris are far away, still likely dealing with the aftermath of Prospero. As much as I admire your enthusiasm, the Raven Guard cannot match the might of the Lunar Wolves. No, when the Blood Angels hear of this treachery, there'll be no stopping Sanguinius. Lord Dorne calls him the Angel of Death, and I can't imagine Fulgrim, Pityrabo, Lorgar, or any of the others wanting to step between Horus and the Angel's vengeance. It'll be Sanguinius. Mark my words.
Bran reached into his belt and pulled out a ring with two large keys on it. They were dull, much scratched, and slightly bent, the wear of decades plain to see.
I took these from the first man I killed during the Liberation War, said Bran. If Sanguinius kills Horus, they're yours.
A wager? Said Norris.
If you like, said Bran. What do you offer up?
Norris glanced at his legionaries and received nods of encouragement.
All right,
said Norris. He unhooked a golden shield from the lanyard on his right shoulder plate and held it up to Bran. It was inscribed with a single word. Narandia.
My first battle honour, awarded for slaying an orc commander. If Russ gets to Horus first, you can have it.
This was greeted with claps and a cheer from the Raven Guard.
I'll be watching your back to make sure that you survive long enough to hand over that shiny medal, said Bran.
And I will be watching yours, Commander,
replied Norris, slapping his hand against Bran's breastplate.
I've always desired to own a rusty set of keys.
Returning the keys to their pouch, Bran hoped that one of them would prove right. If Horus reached Terra, nothing would be certain. The slow drumming of Agapito's fingers sounded from the metal desk. He stared at the communications log, angered by the single highlighted line of data. Someone had broken his personal cipher and endangered everything. He wondered who it might be and narrowed his suspicions to a few individuals, legionaries that had caught his eye by their idiosyncratic behaviour. There was nothing solid on which to base his accusations, though, just an uncertainty that nagged at him. With Bran scrutinising everything he was doing, Agapito felt trapped. His questions had been off the mark, but they were unwelcome attention. Bran was stumbling around, searching for something but not knowing what it was. His careless investigation threatened to uncover everything by accident, and that couldn't be allowed, not before Agapito had a chance to make his move. A vox chime interrupted his thoughts. He switched off the display and activated the speaker.
Commander Agapito, I have a matter to discuss with you.
He recognized the voice of Custodian Arcatus. The Custodian Guard had kept to themselves for most of the time since arriving on Deliverance, quartered in the mid-levels of Ravenspire that had once been home to the Lost Companies. Every now and then, they would emerge, conducting inspections of the Armorium, the docks, and other secure areas. That was another inconvenience, but Korax had been adamant that the Custodians were given free range of Deliverance, and Agapito's protests had been ignored. The one concession the commander had managed to extract meant that the Custodians were not entitled to travel to Ravendelve. That would have been too much for the Primarch, who guarded the Gene Project and its secrecy the same way he had guarded his followers during the uprising.
I am in my chambers now, Custodian, said Agapito. We can talk here.
Very well, Commander. I am on my way.
Agapito wondered what subject would be up for discussion. It was unusual for the Custodian Guard to interact with the Legion in this way. He wondered if Bran had got involved somehow, and his thoughts soured again. At least the gene tech and new recruit seemed to be a complete success. Bran would soon have no time to ponder other matters. As commander of recruits, he would be kept occupied at Ravendelve. It seemed a pointless exercise, but Alpharius was not going to attract attention by mentioning it. He lowered into a half-crouch, arms a little apart, and circled around the recruit. As he sidestepped to the left, he could see Korax and Bran out of the corner of his eye, watching him and Cadian, gauging each other. The newly enhanced Cadian looked the part, taller than but not quite as broad as Alpharius, with rangy limbs and a determined glare. He might possess the physical qualities of a legionary, but he had none of the training and experience. Alpharius had noticed the Raven Guard were prone to wagers, and had bet Sergeant Dor that he would best Cadian within 2 minutes. The stake was 10 days of armour maintenance. Alpharius flexed his fingers as he pictured the sergeant polishing his suit. The two warriors wore only loose black trousers for the bout, leaving little for Alpharius to grip for a throw. He lunged, attempting to grab Cadian's left wrist, but the recruit was 2 steps away within a heartbeat. Alpharius's grapple missing badly. The recruit's face was a mask of concentration, eyes flicking between Alpharius's hands, feet and face, looking for any warning of his next move. Circling again, Alpharius could feel the expectation from the rest of the squad, urging him on to victory. There was no cheering, though, just studied silence from everyone in the hall, the only sound coming from the slap of the combatant's feet on the hard floor. Cadian sidestepped and swept a leg out, trying to trip Alpharius. The Alpha Legionnaire jumped just in time, already moving his weight forwards to shoulder charge his opponent. He landed and leapt, only to find himself not connecting with Cadian, but running through empty air. A kick to his back sent Alpharius onwards a few more steps before he could halt his impetus and turn. Immediately he was forced to throw up his arms to block a combination of punches aimed at his head, catching the blows on his forearms. Alpharius aimed a kick at Cadian's abdomen, catching a glancing blow on the recruit's hip as he dodged back. Pressing forwards, seeking to exploit Cadian's imbalance, Alpharius again tried for a grapple. He seized hold of the recruit's left arm and twisted, trying to force him down to the ground. With a suppleness and strength that Alpharius had never encountered, Cadian arched his back and heaved up with his trapped arm, lifting the legionnaire from his feet. Dropping to the floor, Cadian turned to toss Alpharius over his back, forcing the legionary to release his grip to turn a hard landing into a forward roll. A punch to the spine sent Alpharius sprawling, the attack coming so quickly from behind, he had no idea how Cadian had regained his feet in the half-second that had passed. He half-rolled to his right, coming up to face his opponent, just in time for his chin to meet the heel of Cadian's right foot. Slamming back into the rockcrete, Alpharius smashed his head against the floor as he fell. He rolled away as the recruit's foot slammed down onto the floor where Alpharius's throat had been a moment before. Cadian's other foot lashed into his ribs almost instantly, forcing the air from the legionnaire's lungs. He anticipated the next kick, managing to twist far enough to grab Cadian's ankle in both hands before his foot connected with Alpharius's gut. Surging to his feet, the Alpha Legionnaire heaved up, seeking to force Cadian to his back. With precise timing, Cadian used Alpharius's hold on his ankle for support, surging up to crash a knee into his chest. Alpharius toppled backwards, and the two of them fell in a heap. Alpharius let go with one hand and hammered a fist into Cadian's side, even as the recruit slammed the tip of his elbow into the legionnaire's cheek. Snatching his foot free from Alpharius's grasp, Cadian turned and knelt across his throat, pinning him down. Gasping, Alpharius locked eyes with Cadian and saw ferocious intent. The recruit drew back his fist, aiming for Alpharius's face. "Stop!" Bran's shout cut through the pounding of blood in Alpharius's ears. Cadian jumped up and stepped away immediately, retreating with light steps. Alpharius's head was ringing. The ceiling swam in and out of focus for a few moments before his vision cleared. Sergeant Dor approached, hand outstretched to help him to his feet. Irritated, Alpharius ignored the assistance and pushed himself up. He glanced angrily at Cadian, who was looking at him with a polite smile. Behind Cadian, the other 8 recruits were grinning at their companion's victory. Still smarting from his defeat, Alpharius returned to his squad, ignoring the smug look on Dor's face. Another recruit and another legionary were called forwards, and the next bout began. Recovering his senses, Alpharius could hear the conversation between Bran and Korax, standing not far to his left.
"Reactions and strength are better than a matured legionary," said Bran. "I've never seen anything like it." "Which is fine for unarmored, unarmed combat," replied Korax. "Those advantages will be much reduced when they have their power armor."
"I've been thinking about that, Lord," said Bran, eyes fixed on the two warriors sparring. "The new Mark VI suits. They're far superior to anything else we have, except for a few artificer suits for officers, and even they're pretty bashed up. We can't implant the experience and guile of a veteran into these men, but the new armor and their advanced systems would go some way to helping with that."
"I was thinking the same," said the Primarch. These are not just recruits. They are the start of something new for the Legion. I have told Six to progress with another 100 implantations. If we can successfully scale up, you'll have a fighting force within 50 days. Commander of recruits doesn't seem to reflect your role properly. Bran glanced at his leader.
You said this would be a combat force when you gave me the title, Lord.
They need a name, Bran, said Korax. We can't keep calling them recruits. But it isn't right that they simply get absorbed by Agapito's talons.
I have a suggestion, said Bran.
Then share it, Commander.
We have the talons, falcons, and hawks, Lord. I think we should be the raptors.
The raptors? Korax smiled and placed a massive hand on Bran's shoulder.
Yes, that will suit perfectly. Swift hunters, you are the commander of the raptors now. I'll inform Agapito, Solaro, and Aloni.
With a grunt and a thud, the legionary dueling with the raptor ended up face first on the floor, one arm twisted hard against his back. The raptor snaked an arm around his neck and pulled, eliciting a pained snarl from the legionary.
Stop!
Bran called.
The raptors, thought Alpharius, looking at the line of warriors nodding encouragement to their companion as he returned to the rank. If Korax was right and the raptors would be battle-ready within 50 days, Omegon had to hear about this. Alpharius had held off making any reports so far, but this was news worthy of the risk. Whatever the Alpha Legion Primarch was planning, he would have to move swiftly if he was to counter the resurgence in the Raven Guard's fortunes. Korax seemed to be content with what he saw. Alpharius watched him leave. Just before the Primarch passed through the large doors from the hall, he stopped and looked back, deep in thought. A frown creased the pale skin of his brow, not of anger, but of concern. It lasted only for a few seconds, and Alpharius was left to ponder what had passed through the Primarch's thoughts as he had gazed back at the young raptors.
The guard's visor shattered inwards, sending shards of reinforced transpex into the man's eyes. He fell back, howling. Corvus drove his fist into the screaming man's chest, silencing him in an explosion of bone fragments and pulped organs. The rattle of automatic weapon fire sounded behind him, and he felt a stinging sensation across his back. Looking over his shoulder, Corvus saw three men at the outpost rampart, a jutting defense position that overlooked the approach from Wing 2 to the vehicle compound. More gunfire chattered, and another hail of bullets pattered from his pale flesh, flattened rounds tinkling to the floor around him. The rebel leader reached down and took the rifle from the dead guard's hands. The finger guard was too small for his huge digits, so he wrenched it off. Though in reality a large caliber weapon, the rifle felt like a child's toy in his hands. Lifting his arm, he turned and sighted on the men in the guard post. They were about 200 meters away, and he adjusted his aim a fraction to account for the poor charge in the rifle's bullets. The muzzle of the rampart gun flared again, ripping chunks from the pockmarked wall behind Corvus, rattling against his left arm. He pulled the trigger. The man firing the rampart gun sagged across his weapon, a hole punched through his left cheek just beneath the visor. His finger tightened as he died, sending a burst of bullets into the ground as the gun swung on its mounting. Firing again, Corvus put his next shot through the throat of the loader, exposed by the swinging of the weapon. The third man turned to run. He was pitched from his feet as Corvus placed his third shot between the man's shoulder blades, shattering his spine.
Here,
said Corvus, seeing Delpha running past without a weapon. He handed the youth the rifle. The rebel leader jerked his head towards the body.
There are spare magazines in the guard's belt.
The first wave had nearly reached the gate. The guards had sealed it from inside, believing themselves to be safe behind three interlocking layers of steels and ferrocrete. They were wrong. Corvus lifted the radio transmitter from his belt.
Constantin, enact the override.
Yes, Korax, came the tinny reply.
The word meant savior. Corvus had asked his followers to call him by the name he had already been given, but more and more of them insisted on the honorific. If that was their attitude, he was determined to prove them right and live up to their expectations. Seeing a discarded shotgun, Corvus strode forwards and snatched it up. The fighting was about to get close and brutal. He pulled his knife, in fact it was a security colonel's parade sword, from his belt and quickly caught up with the front of a mob streaming down the wide corridor towards the gate. If they could secure the garage facility, they would have enclosed vehicles to cross the airless wasteland outside.
The strategic advantage of being freed from the confines of the prison buildings had made the compound one of Corvus's priorities.
"Override in 5 seconds, Korax," reported Constantine.
"Press on!"
the guerrilla leader roared, waving his shotgun towards the gates. He was only a dozen strides from the blank surface of the portal. If the charges he had placed within the mechanism during his last unseen infiltration had been discovered, he was about to look very stupid. A ripple of tiny pops rang through the metal. Corvus reached the lockdown lever a few seconds later. The corpse of the man who had pulled it lay crumpled at the rebel's feet. If all had gone as Corvus planned, the lockdown was anything but secure. He pushed the lever up, feeling no resistance. In that moment, he knew he had been right. Sirens blared and warning lights spun along the top of the gate as the massive portal ground open.
"Ready, weapons!"
Corvus bellowed over the deafening rumble of immense gears. The door had lifted no more than half a meter from the ground when a hail of bullets erupted from beyond it, ripping through knees and shins. More than 20 men and women fell screaming, clutching at their ruined legs. A swathe of the inmates turned and ran to avoid the same fate. Corvus's eye was drawn immediately to Lensa. She lay on her right side, left leg pulled up, her foot hanging off by a few scraps of sinew. Her young eyes met Corvus's, and she relaxed. Her shrieking stopped, and she smiled. A second later, another hail of bullets thudded into her body, tearing off half her face and punching great holes through the rest of her body. With a snarl, Corvus dropped to the floor and rolled under the ascending door. He came to his feet in front of two men standing behind a heavy stubber, its tripod lowered as far as possible. The shotgun roared in Corvus's hand, ripping through the protective vest of the closest guard. The second fumbled for a pistol, pulling it free from its holster at his hip, just as Corvus pumped another round into the chamber. The guard frantically pulled the trigger, sending bullets bouncing off Corvus's chest. The gun clicked empty several times, and the man's face fell in horror. A hail of shot tore through his arm and shoulder, sending him spinning to the ground in a fountain of ruddy droplets. The other gun crew was trying to turn their weapon towards the rebel leader. Tossing aside the shotgun, Corvus heaved the stubber from its mounting, kicking the tripod aside. He slung the belt of ammunition over his arm and brought the weapon to bear on the remaining men. 3 short bursts were enough to kill them, the shots carefully placed not to damage the other heavy stubber. The gate was now about a meter and a half off the ground, and more rebels were pouring through. Corvus directed Bran, Agapito, and Starkin to take possession of the heavy weapon.
"Keep moving!"
Corvus shouted.
"Keep moving!"